when someone plants a bomb somewhere, that's called terrorism. When someone puts a GPS tracker on your car, that's called surveillance. But why? What is terrorism? And who is terrorizing whom? Anne Roth will give you a practical experience.
Good evening. On the 30th of July of this year, my son turned 5 years. We had a nice birthday party. He got lots of presents, his first computer. He stayed up pretty late, so did we, and then we went to bed. At 7 o'clock the next morning, there were very hard bangs on our door, and outside were the Federal Police of Germany, who were about to kick in our door and arrested my partner, André Holm, for being a terrorist. That day, a nightmare started in our life that hasn't really finished by now. And I'm going to talk to you about a little bit about the background of this case of terrorism in Germany. The legal proceedings, I'll try to keep that short. I think probably many of you have read or heard something about this. And what I was invited here to talk about for is that a while after all of this has started, I decided to start a weblog and describe the details, the everyday life of living with surveillance that is directed at terrorists in Germany. I'll give a short overview of why I started blogging. I'll tell you some of the stories that I blogged about and that raised a lot of attention. I'll try to also go a little bit into the reactions that I got, mostly from comments, but also from articles, people talking to me. And if there's time in the end, I'll talk a little bit about what I think surveillance does to you. André was arrested in our house. He was thrown on the floor, handcuffed, put on the sofa. I was told to wake my children. All of this happened with something like 15 armed cops who stormed into our place and screamed at us. I was told to wake up my children and dress them and give them breakfast and take them to kindergarten and then to come back. I called a lawyer, and André was taken away to some prison, some police station in Berlin, and the cops raided our place for something like 15 hours. They left around 11 at night after having gone through all of our books, all of our videotapes, all the waste paper that we had somewhere, even the waste paper outside, etc., etc., etc. All of these kinds of things that you know from watching crime thrillers on TV, maybe. And it was pretty much like that. It's a very strange feeling to have it happen in your bedroom all of a sudden when you wake up and you look at some armed cop. And I think the only thing that I thought was, okay, so this is what that feels like. I think many of us maybe have, or maybe not many of us, but I think some of us, political activists probably, or hackers, I think, have thought of the theoretical possibility that something like that could happen. We all probably make jokes sometimes about funny sounds in our phones that someone might be listening in, or wondering whether the person who is also in the street might be some plainclothes cop. I think that's something that you don't really think about a lot. But then all of a sudden it became true in my life. My partner was gone. He was flown to Karlsruhe together with three others who were also arrested that very same night, who were forced to wear white suits that reminded people of Guantanamo-style suits. And they were then issued an arrest warrant by the Federal High Court of Germany for being terrorists, for forming a terrorist organization called the Militant Group. The legal construction of this case is that allegedly there is four so-called academics who formed this militant group, and an investigation against them was started in September 2006, as far as we know. That's what's in the files. And The initial suspicion was based on an internet research. It has been described often as a Google research. As far as we know, it wasn't done with Google, but some kind of software that is used by police. And they were looking for texts to compare them to declarations by this militant group and to do a linguistic analysis to find out whether these four academics may be the authors of those texts. What they were looking for were words like gentrification, precarization, frame of reference, many other words that probably very many people use, and someone has said that probably through this case, now gentrification is much better known than it was ever before. They were looking for texts by specific people, which leaves the possibility to say that if you publish online, and if you use your real name, and if you publish on certain topics, then that already may be the reason for an initial suspicion by the Federal Police of Germany, whether you might be a terrorist. Another reason given in the arrest warrant for arresting André was that he matched what the police consider the some criteria they think the militant group fits, which is he had a lot of close friends. He has an extraordinary political and historical knowledge. He had no police record. He is able to write analytical texts, and he is not a member of any specific part of left-wing movements. These are the criteria that they are looking for when they look for the militant group that they have been looking for, as far as I know, since 2001. And there is another investigation against other people who are also accused of being militant group, and so far they haven't really found anyone, I think. The third criteria for the arrest warrant was that allegedly they were using what is called conspirative behavior. For example, they didn't take their mobile phones to some meetings, or they made dates with friends and didn't explicitly say when and where exactly they were going to meet and why. For example, if you call someone and say, "Why don't we meet tomorrow in the same bar we always meet?" that is considered conspirative behavior. Also, if you meet a friend and you go for a walk and then sometimes you turn around or you turn around again, this is considered looking out for someone who might be watching for you, meaning you are aware that someone might be watching out for you, and that is conspirative in itself and is a reason that was given in the arrest warrant by the Federal Court of Germany to actually send André and the three others to prison. The three others that were arrested with him were allegedly caught on the road after having tried to set fire to three army vehicles. And they were arrested, or they were followed, as far as we can tell, because one of them allegedly has met André twice, once in February, once in April, and in this way got into the attention of the cops that were following André around. And because these three met, or one of the three met with one of the four, it's a bit tricky, like there's three people who were caught trying to set fire to army trucks, and they are now terrorists because they met with one who is part of four people who have been considered to be terrorists since September last year. I know this is not easy to understand, but that's the way it works. Four terrorists, three arsonists, this is in brackets, make together 3-7 terrorists. Who still now are under investigation. André was released preliminarily from prison after 3 weeks on bail, and the federal prosecutor filed a complaint against this release, and thus the High Court had to decide whether they would grant this complaint. And this was a very important decision they made that took place on the 24th of October. And in fact, the High Court said that not only did they not grant the complaint by the federal prosecutor, but also they completely overthrew the arrest warrant, basically saying that from their point of view, only suspicion isn't enough. That's written in this decision. And they considered not enough for not actually any hard evidence being given by the police at all, and so the arrest warrant was taken back, but the investigation was still going on. What was very tricky about this decision is that the federal court doesn't give you any dates when they will make decisions. So after Andre was released on the 22nd of August, we knew that this decision was going to come about the complaint by the federal prosecutor. And if they had granted the decision, Andre would have been arrested and would have been put back into prison. And we didn't know when this decision was going to be made. So basically for 2 months, we were waiting, and we knew that they weren't going to call us before and say that they made this decision. We knew that the cops were just going to show up and arrest him right away. And we were living with this situation for 2 months. Unfortunately, the decision was a good decision, and so there was no more prison for him, but the other three were still in prison, and then also filed a complaint against the situation of them being in prison when the main terrorist already wasn't considered such a bad terrorist anymore. So this decision was made on the 28th of November, and all three of them were released then also. The court also had to decide whether or what actually they thought constitutes terrorism, and when this terrorist law of Germany should be applied, and to whom and for what. And that was quite an important decision to be made, and actually they decided that that these seven are not a terrorist organization anymore, but instead a so-called militant organization, which from the point of view of surveillance doesn't really make such a big difference, I think, and the investigation is pretty much the same, but the possible sentence that they will get in this law case is reduced from 10 to 5 years. The proceedings are being done under the terrorist article 129A of the German Penal Code, and basically this has been widely considered as a method mainly to investigate and use surveillance against political activists in Germany. Only very few of the people against whom these investigations are being started are actually taken to court. The numbers vary, it's something like between 3 and 5%. For all others, there's just an investigation being carried out, sometimes a long-term investigation that goes over a year. Normally, people don't even find out that this investigation is happening. Only very, very rarely the cases are actually opened and people are being told about this. Often the cases are just being closed. A lot of information has been gathered and people will never find out. At the moment, there is, as far as we know, 4 cases happening against terrorists who are, in fact, political activists. There's 40 suspects against these investigations are being done, and these 40 suspects have many friends against who are also mentioned in the files, and we have a rough estimate, and we think that approximately 2,000 people are mentioned in these files that are also under investigation of some sort, their phones being listened to, their dates being watched, people following them around, GPS or other listening devices in their car, etc., etc. The normal set of investigation, so to say, is that your phones are being listened to, also your friends' phones, your partner's phones, your family, everybody. There's video cameras outside, at least outside the houses. All of your telecommunication is being intercepted. That means all of your email, all of your internet, all of your phone calls that goes via internet. Often you have GPS and bugging devices in cars. Andre was in prison for 3 weeks, and I realized after a few days when he was arrested that my life had changed into something very different than it had been before. It took a while to get over the shock of having your partner arrested in a situation where you really didn't think this was going to happen like that. And then I instantly turned into an expert, having to answer questions about what is prison like, what is surveillance like, how do these law cases work, what is the legal proceedings like, why is all of this happening, and what actually did he do? And all of these things were things that I really didn't know. And after a while, I started thinking that some of the things that I had noticed before that I found somehow a bit funny but didn't really pay a lot of attention to may have to do with the surveillance that we were subjected to. And only after a while, I was told and realized and found out that me too, I had my phone being listened to all the time since already the beginning of January of this year, that all of my email was being read, etc., etc. And I had my phone react in strange ways. Actually, I had before thought that my phone was somehow, the hardware was somehow broken because it crashed all the time. It just stopped working all of the time, and I was about to give it back, but didn't then, luckily, because I don't know what else I would have gotten. And all of these strange stories that I had in my head were in a way that I thought, if I tell this to anybody, people are not going to believe me, or else they are going to think this is really very strange. Or they will find this really strange, but it will be forgotten after a while. You tell these stories and then they go away again. I thought I need to write these things down because it's very bizarre and it's not very few people who have this kind of thing happening. Then I started thinking about blogging, and before I was not very fond of writing weblogs. I actually am quite fond of my privacy. I don't really like so much, or didn't like that much, the idea of presenting my private life to a public I don't know. And also I did think that the pressure of having to produce something all the time to be up to date and to make it be interesting was something that I didn't really want to issue myself to. On the other hand, I thought there are so many people who have a right to know, who really want to know. We had a lot of people who gave support in all different kinds, who donated money, who helped me with the children, who offered all kinds of other help that we could use, and also all of our family, of course, had a right to understand what all of these details were about, and so I thought I need to write this down for people. And in the beginning I started emailing about it, and then I thought, okay, then why not blog about it? Then I have it all in one place, it's documented, and then the cops know about it anyway, so if they know about it, then probably everybody else can know about it also. I started blogging in the beginning of October, quite late. It really took me a while to make this decision. And in the beginning, only very few people read about it. I didn't know much about blogging. I didn't feel like getting into all of these little things that you can do to make your blog better known. But it was picked up rather fast, after 3 weeks, I think, by some other rather well-known bloggers, and then it got a lot of attention. The stories that I wrote in my blog are some stories about that describe the search, that describe the arrest, that describe the situation in prison, then some describe this everyday situation with surveillance, all the little, very little funny things that happen that you don't really know whether this has something to do with surveillance or whether it's just some technical little problem that is just normal, but you're already wondering about this all the time. Is that normal? Is that not normal? Is that surveillance? Is that the cops? Is it not? Makes your head turn a lot, and it actually feels much better to just write it down and not think about it all the time. And then also I started writing about the details of the legal proceedings, which in itself are also really quite crazy and have very many details where you didn't really think that in a democracy or a so-called democracy like ours, legal proceedings against terrorists, which are considered to be the major threat against civil society or civilized society, would actually work on a level like this. The prison stories are shocking in a way, and in a way they are not. There's many people who live in prison. Actually, this is not special to terrorists, and it is very shocking, and most people don't know about these things. What I didn't know and didn't realize is that, for example, if people are in investigative detention, meaning they haven't been tried yet, that they have to have friends or family who wash their laundry. You have to go there every week, pick up the dirty laundry, wash it, and bring it back once a week. I thought this something like that would be happening in Russia, maybe, but I really didn't realize in Germany it's like that. What is special about prison for terrorists in Germany, or so-called terrorists in Germany, is that you cannot touch the person that you visit. There is a window in between, and you have people sitting next to you by the federal police who are listening and writing down what you speak, and on the other side as well, you can like watch your partner, and then you watch the person sitting next to him, and you have a microphone that you talk through, and everything is being listened to, which is not very intimate. Specifically not if you haven't talked to each other for a week or so, and then you have something like that. The same goes for letters. It took me a long time to start writing letters. Andre got a lot of letters and postcards in prison, and I think this was really helpful for him. It is very nice if you get at least something from the outside world that is supportive. But for me, it really took me a long time to start writing, because I had the feeling, basically, I'm not writing to him, because the judge who has been signing all of these papers by the police asking for methods of investigation to be approved is the same guy who's reading all of my letters to him. So I had the feeling I'm not really writing to my partner, but instead I'm writing to some judge, and then my partner also gets to read it, and that's the feeling that I had, and that is not very, very intimate as well. Also, I thought in a way this was strange, because I knew that my phone was being listened to all the time by that time, and it was easier for me to deal with this than to deal with the fact that a judge was reading the letter. It doesn't really make a difference, but it felt very different. There's many more things to be said about prison, but not today. When he was released from prison, something happened that got a lot of attention also, because it was extremely scandalous, I think. And he was released from prison 3 weeks after he was arrested. He had a lot of things to carry, because he didn't think before that, well, none of this was planned, basically. So he had a lot of stuff. His parents and I were picking him up from prison, and he had two big folders with files, because he had just gotten those to prepare himself for other decisions to be made. And so, of course, the prisoners have a right to see their files. And his mother had had a black bag that she normally uses for shopping, and so she gave him this black bag to put his files inside. And we went home. And the next day, he called his mother on the phone saying, why don't we all meet next Sunday for some coffee and cake, and you come by and the children, and we're all together and have a nice, very quiet and friendly and relaxing Sunday afternoon. And what happened then is that she also was not yet quite used to being listened to on the phone, and she didn't realize then that you shouldn't really be either ironic or not too non-explicit when you talk on the phone while the police is listening. And she said then, also, I would like to talk about the content of the black bag. Which resulted in the federal police hearing that, making the mistake of thinking that apparently it must have been, can't be other, any other explanation for that, some really drastic evidence must be in the apartment of the parents, which she is going to bring to the meeting, and then we are all going to talk about that. I don't know exactly how police think terrorists work, but the idea that you would put something very dangerous that you use for terrorist attacks in your parents' apartment and then talk about it on the phone is something I would not really imagine to happen, but apparently the police thought that is quite likely, and so they started following his parents around. They were included in the observation. They had actually considered raiding their apartment because of that evidence, and the idea was that they would stop them before they came to our house with this black bag of this really dangerous evidence and search their bag. For some reason, they didn't manage. These are two elderly people, very friendly. They don't usually run and jump, and it's, I think, not very difficult to just stop them in the street, but they didn't manage. And then, and this is written down in the files very nicely, and actually I thought that was really nice because it gave us something to laugh about. Several hours of phone calls Sunday afternoon. The federal prosecutor of Germany was busy and in her office, and the federal police was busy and in their office, and they had lots of phone calls going back and forth. Who was now going to go into our place and search? Because they had decided another raid was necessary, because this evidence must be so important that they really need to get it. And several hours later, we had eaten all the cake and we had had our coffee and we were just about to go for a walk. Another bang on the door, and again the federal police searching our house, wanting to have a look at the black bag. And at that moment I really thought, this is a very strange game. We showed them the content of the black bag. We had a little screaming match because, again, the children were in the apartment. Again, we had lots of police, well, not as many, but police with arms who stormed into the apartment, who demanded that their orders were followed right away. And I wanted the children out. Our children are small. I don't think they need to see all of this. I don't think they need to make these experiences. And of course, that was... Thank you. This was not possible. All of these legal procedures had to go on right away with the children there who stared at everything. They realized that it was only the files. They were told by the lawyers who were called by the time and really screamed at them very loudly that this is really the only thing that the police are not allowed to look at. The files to the proceedings given to the defendant to be used. As a defense material, and that's something the police are not allowed to look at, but they did anyways. And then there were two police officers who kind of walked through our apartment and didn't... it was obvious and visible that they also didn't really believe in the necessity of this thing and didn't feel very comfortable. That's one of the stories that I wrote and was considered rather amazing by a lot of people. Another thing that I thought was quite bizarre to see is that we had video cameras before our house and behind our house that were videotaping everyone who was coming in and who was going out, and in a very detailed way, at 3 o'clock, André Holm with two children goes out, and 3:10, he and two children come back, and long, long, long lists of descriptions of stuff like that. They had put up the video cameras apparently sometime in the winter and hadn't realized that during spring, trees tend to grow leaves. And realized, and this is also in the files, that the video camera behind the house couldn't really document anymore what was happening behind the house and who was leaving and entering, and so they took that back. And as a result, in the files you see it mentioned that since the video camera behind the house couldn't operate anymore properly and had to be taken down during this or the other attack, they couldn't completely exclude the possibility that André left the house and therefore may have participated in these attacks, which made me think that maybe we should ask for more video cameras rather than less. I couldn't get myself to actually demanding that, but I was wondering. Some of the technical little things that were happening were, for example, and this happened many, many times, that when I called from my mobile, André's mobile, then surprisingly I didn't reach him, but instead my own mailbox. This happened to other people too. It happened lots and lots and lots of times that I had people calling me who said, oh, but actually I dialed André's number. And also it happened that the phones who seemed to be working okay and looked okay and didn't have a dark monitor or anything actually didn't work when people called them and instead had crashed but didn't show. We had emails disappear, and that's something that I really found quite unbelievable. I didn't think this was technically possible. We had several instances where I actually checked this. For example, I administrate several mailing lists, and André tried to subscribe to one of these mailing lists, and his email trying to subscribe to the mailing list never appeared. And then I tried as a list administrator to subscribe him, and this also didn't work. The emails going back and forth around this issue never got to where they were sent to, and we took quite some time to trace these things, and still today it's unclear to me how that actually works, but it was amazing to watch when you like look at your mailbox and you see something that's sent and you look at where it should be arriving and it just doesn't, and you do it a second time and then it arrives, but the first one just isn't there. We had funny behavior of our TV. This has happened already way before. I think you probably all know this incident, like you sit on your computer and you have boxes connected to the computer and your phone is being called, and all of a sudden the boxes of your computer do something like did. And our TV was doing the same thing and had started also months before we knew about the investigation, and we had understood as much that we needed to put our mobile phones in some other room or turn them off if we wanted to be able to watch TV. And after the arrest, of course, I understood why this was happening all of the time. And but also I had been told by the lawyer that now, because everything that could be considered conspirative behavior should be avoided at the moment, I try to not ever turn my phone off. I try to not ever forget my phone anywhere. Even though I was not, or am not, as far as I know, a terrorism suspect, I still didn't want to give any more hint that something may be wrong. I really had enough of all of this, so I didn't want to turn my phone off. And but I also wanted to watch this show that I wanted to watch, and what I did was then, and that is a pretty good indication of what surveillance does to you. I called my mother, whom I knew was watching the same show and really didn't want to be disturbed by watching that. And I called her and said, listen, I'm not actually calling you. I don't want to disturb you very much. I'm calling you because I want to tell the cops that I'm going to turn my mobile off so that I can watch TV. I felt a bit funny doing that. The really funny thing, though, is it worked. I didn't need to turn the mobile off. The did-it just stopped. Other bizarre things... Oh, actually, I forgot something that I was supposed to do in the beginning while I'm looking over there. I'll do a little excursion in the very middle of this. Law cases, legal proceedings, as you can all imagine, are extremely expensive. We need more than 5,000 euro a month to pay all the lawyers. I have a little box for donations over there, and it would be very nice if you could pass them around and donate a little bit, because we are not rich. Thank you. Now I'll go back to blogging about funny things. The complaint the federal prosecutor filed against the release of Andrei from prison was... had several reasons given for why he could not ever be released from prison at this point and why he was so very dangerous. One is that so-called, in legal terms, it's called danger of absconding, meaning that the danger that he would run away and flee was so great that he needed to be in prison. And one of the reasons given in the document by the federal prosecutor why apparently the danger that he might flee Germany is so great is because earlier that year Andre has applied for a job in the Netherlands. And there was a phone call between him and his mother, who was worried a little bit and said, but then assuming you were accepted in the Netherlands, how are you going to deal with the situation with the family and the children? And who's going to live where? And then he said, well, maybe in the beginning I'll have to go by myself and go back and forth a lot. And then if it is a long-term situation, then we might all move there. And this was considered evidence enough to say that apparently the close social ties that were given as reason for him to be released from prison don't exist. Because apparently he is willing to live away from his family in the Netherlands. And so needs to be put back in prison. Which I thought was rather amazing, because all of the unemployment agencies in Germany, I think, consider this something rather normal to do, even if you have a family that you actually like and want to live with. Also, another thing that was stated as a reason for him to actually need to be in prison was the danger of repetition. And that is something that I found also rather bizarre, because what he is accused of is forming a terrorist organization. Meaning that the danger of repetition, and this is actually stated also quite explicitly, means that once he's out of prison, there is a danger that he might just go out and form just another terrorist organization. And I would really like to know more about what the police think, how terrorist organizations get formed, because I had thought this worked differently. Other things... One story that I really kind of thought rather drastic and I actually didn't manage to write about yet is an anonymous call that happened at the Institute of Sociology at the Humboldt University of Berlin. An anonymous call to one of the colleagues of Andre at the Institute of Sociology saying that the cops had demanded 20 to 25 personal files of people working there to get those files to be handed over to look at them. And the university never commented on that. And we thought that is really rather drastic to have one sociologist being accused of terrorism and have his life being investigated in such a way already raised a lot of attention. The idea that 20 or 25 other intellectuals or academics are being subjected to this kind of investigation just because they are sociologists and work with Andre seemed rather rough. Again, the university never confirmed this information. It was just an anonymous call. It may have been made up, I don't know, but I thought it was... I can imagine it's possible. Also, Andre's account to the network files that he has at the university and to his email on the server at the university. While he was in prison, the account, the password was changed, which normally can only be done by the person themselves. Of course, you have this rhythm when you have to, like, sometimes when you have these big servers, you have to change your password or you're asked to do another one every so many months. But this clearly happened, and that's documented while he was in prison. We contacted the data protection, authority of the university as well of Berlin was contacted about this issue because it is rather, I think, not really complying with the data protection regulations that someone breaks into network files of the university and can access the files not only of this one person but of the whole department of the university. And what came out of that is that... Yes, the password was changed. Yes, somebody probably messed with all of these things. It cannot be proven how this happened. We don't know who that was, and the data protection authority said that there's different possible ways of doing that, either pressurizing someone who has access to the password or real hacking, but since there is no proof, there is no case made out of that. But this apparently, I'd say, is rather evidently one of the methods of the policing of the police trying to get information, which I thought was rather strange because the legal possibilities that they have are already rather wide, and then to use methods that are clearly illegal seemed surprising to me. These are some of the stories, and there's many more in the blog. Most of them are in German. I'm really sorry about that. I would like to have time to translate all of that into English or write both English and German, but my life has been rather intense and I just didn't manage. Maybe someday I will. The reactions to the blog were surprising to me. I didn't expect to have so many reactions. I didn't really think that this would cause so much stir up. People who read it in the beginning were friends and family, which was my intention because, like I said, I wrote these things down to tell people who I knew anyways and to not have to repeat these things all of the time. And then, of course, bloggers, other bloggers. I started to get to know the German blogosphere better than I did before. And then there's people with an affiliation to new media and technologies who are reading my blog. And of course, people who follow the legal proceedings. I think these are basically the main groups who are reading what I write. And the reactions, there are several types of reactions. Lots of people were extremely shocked. There were many people who said that they find this especially shocking because they thought something like what's happening to us only happens in totalitarianist states. Some even compared it to fascism, which I wouldn't do that, but it happened several times. The comparison to the Eastern Bloc, to China, Korea, Russia, was done several times. One quotation, I would never have thought that we would get this far in our democracy. Other people considered it to be very brave to do a weblog about surveillance like that. There was also some more theoretical thoughts saying, is it, for example, is it dissident to blog about everyday life? And I'm thinking about how blogging is a dissident act in itself. Others said it's a way to gain back autonomy when you're living a life of total control. There was another group of people who very explicitly said that they were afraid to comment on my blog as a part of my blog, or even to link to my blog, or even to look at it. As a part of this law case against the so-called militant group, it became known that the Federal Police of Germany has done a so-called honeypot and has some information about the militant group on their websites, but they log all the IPs who look at that website. And so people very clearly drew the parallel, also saying that if they just look at my blog, they will probably also be under investigation. And actually, I thought for the people who said that they really worried about whether it was okay to add comments, to do that as a comment, I thought that was rather a little brave step to do as well. And then the obvious also happened, and this is something that I was rather afraid of in the beginning when I wasn't so sure whether it's a wise thing to go public with all of these things. There's the discussion whether actually I'm just paranoid with all of these things, and that, like, of course phones can crash, and of course phones make funny sounds, and your TV makes funny sounds, and sometimes there's technical problems, so you call somebody else than you originally wanted to. All of these, of course, can be technical mistakes. But then the big majority said, yeah, okay, it could just be a technical problem, but as she is obviously living with surveillance and so many things are happening, then it's rather likely that actually this is a result of surveillance. There were also people wondering whether I'm real and whether the story is true and whether I'm not just somebody else. And other people try to help us in saying how we could better protect ourselves. For example, that we should be using encryption or Linux, or should use prepaid mobile phones and change them every 2 hours. which I thought was kind of cute, because I was surprised to see that apparently at least partners of sociologists are accused of always using unencrypted Windows. I did have an encrypted hard drive that was seized by the federal police, and until now I don't know whether they managed to crack it, but I would really like to. And it was given back to me two days after it was seized. All the computers were seized also during the raid. Even my son's computer was seized, and that was the biggest argument that I had with the police officers in our place, because I said, listen, my son had his birthday yesterday and he was given a computer and he's never even tried it, and how am I going to explain to him that his birthday present is gone? It's easier to explain why his father is gone, but the birthday present... And after 2 hours of reasoning about this, they agreed to just copy it, and they gave it back the same evening, and my son never knew. Anyway, we had all of these people telling us how to protect our privacy, which I thought was very nice. And on the other hand, I thought maybe this is the worst possible moment in my life to start protecting my privacy more, besides the fact that I don't really think it helps in this situation, because assuming that we probably have keyloggers and all kinds of listening devices and maybe even bugs in our room, and I'm pretty sure that pretty much everything police can do, they have tried on us, so I'm not quite sure it's worth it spending so much time now using more encryption, because at the moment my point of view is that assuming they know it all, personally, I don't think this can be criminalized the way we live. I'll not even try to hide anything at the moment, at least, even though generally I do think people should protect their privacy as much as they can. What I found surprising is I had hoped in a way that we would find out more how in detail surveillance works. I had hoped that people who know more about these types of things would also comment and explain the little mysteries that I have experienced and explain why this happens or why that happens. And that happened very, very little. And I can tell you that I'm always open for this kind of information, because I still would really like to know how this works and how these things are being done. What also was triggered was a general debate about surveillance and the different laws that are in the process of either being realized or introduced at the moment. One One person said, this is exactly the reason why we don't want to have online searches, no data retention, no phone tapping. Or somebody else said, I only now understand all the details of surveillance. Some other quotes. If only half of this is true, it is very dark in Germany, very dark. Or, can't say that you didn't know, and we bloggers are the worst. We type away our bad conscience and link to some questioning articles instead of going out and doing something. Somebody else said, I can't make up my mind whether this is also ridiculous or instead the beginning of fascism. And then something that I also rather liked was there have always been reports about police investigations, but before they were done on paper by cheap print shops and normal people didn't read them because they had too many difficult words. But now this is different. Another longer quotation that I also liked is this. But the two of them have nothing to hide, do they? In that case, a little surveillance along the lines of the laws won't hurt. It can't happen to you. You don't see any bad guys and you always take your mobile along. Do you know what I'm doing later? And whether I sometimes don't take my mobile? These are the forms of abuse everybody is warning about. I didn't think they would be shown in such a bold way. Some other people wondered whether the police is going to start blogging about their point of view and their side of things. As far as I know, they didn't, or in a very conspiratorial way. I didn't notice, but if you find out, please tell me. And there was a lot of support, which felt very good, because if you are subjected to this type of thing, I think it's hard to not go schizophrenic, feeling this happening to you and at the same time thinking this is impossible, this can't be true, this can't be real, this is so ridiculous in one way and so amateurist in a way, so badly done. It's amazing to understand that one of the biggest industrial countries in the world living with the threat of terrorism, and then this is the way how they want to deal with terrorism, being subjected to that and living with that makes you, I think. Well, let's put it differently. I think if I didn't have children, I probably would have gone crazy. I imagine that if people, and there are so many people living with this kind of thing, and I think you can't react in any other way than going extremely depressed or really going crazy, because it's hard to understand that this is actually real, that this is serious, that this is the way police are doing this type of thing. And I think my children forced me to just function and to just go on and make breakfast in the morning and to pick them up from kindergarten and just play funny games and do normal things. And I'm very grateful that this was the way I had to live my life then at that moment. And yeah, and there was so much support, and I wish that other people who live in the same kind of situation took the chance to also go out and get this kind of support by talking about what it feels like to live this kind of life. What I'd like to say in the end, and I really need to finish, is that other people have asked me whether I think our behavior has changed with the surveillance. And I have asked myself whether I think my behavior has changed with surveillance. And in a way, I think for the most things I'd say no. Then again, I think it's not true, because what happens is that you constantly think about it. You constantly control yourself in the things that you do and how you do them. For example, I'm extremely curious. When I am in the street and somebody goes by, or I have to stop for some reason, lock my bike or something, and something moves, and I just, without thinking about it, turn my head. And now every time I stand and lock my bike, I don't turn my head. Or talking on the phone, specifically after these stories like the black bag, when you get the reaction straight away and you get it black on white, what the reaction is and what the police think of the things that you say. you start phrasing things differently. You try to be as clear as possible. You don't just say, come on, let's meet in the same bar. You say, if somebody calls you and says this very same sentence, you know, you mean we want to meet in that and that bar at that and that time to discuss blah, blah, blah. Or you really try to not make any jokes because that is quite evident that police don't like irony. And they really don't understand irony, really, like, because these things are written down apparently and you cannot transmit the tone, and then that would be the nicest interpretation of what's happening. They don't get when you joke, so you just don't joke. You are very serious, you are very matter-of-factly, you describe exactly what you want to say, because in the back of your mind, you always read how they would write it down. And that is still happening with me whenever I'm on the phone. I think about what they would be thinking and how they will comment what I'm saying at the moment, so I try to phrase it in a way that it is not ambiguous. Also, I remember several times I said something and then in the very same moment I thought, oh my God, no, you can't say it like that. For example, I used the pronoun we several times when I described surveillance measures on the phone, and I said, so this is now, this and that is happening, they will again think that we are planning attacks. And then I think, oh my God, but I'm not even accused of planning an attack. It's not about me, it's about him, so I shouldn't be, they will be thinking we, but I should be saying they will be thinking he. And these little things, like you talk, you think about what you think about anyways, and at the same time you think also how they will think about it. And that is rather straining, and it does, of course, change the way you behave on the phone. On the other hand, I try to not change too much. For example, I still fight with people on the phone when I'm angry, and I know other people don't do this kind of thing. I did get new curtains for our apartment because the feeling of having a video camera outside that watches everything that you do is rather not very nice to have. In fact, I mean, I don't know whether we have bugs in the place. I have just recently read some articles about some cops dreaming of having cameras inside apartments, and then this is just the legal part of what the federal police can do. Then there's always the secret services who do things that you don't know about, and usually it's more and it's worse than what the police do. So I wouldn't be too surprised understanding that also there's cameras in our place, but I don't know, of course, and that is a very uncomfortable feeling to never be by yourself wherever you are. I finish now because there's only 5 minutes left. And I hope that you have some questions or comments to what I have to say. Just two little announcements. Because all of this is about terrorism, and because the High Court also has had to decide what terrorism is, we have published a contest on the question, what is terrorism? And we are still looking for contributions by people. And I would like to ask you all to think about what you think is terrorist and what terrorism is. And you can find all of this on our website. Also the contributions by other people, and we are looking for more contributions, and we have very nice prizes to win. And I'll stop here. Thank you. Thank you. Wow.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I can't really see from here. We have only 4 minutes left, but if there's any questions or comments.
I have a very short question. How did you deal with aggression? I mean, especially if your family gets involved and you see to what kind of treatment your or what kind of treatment also your children get? I mean, how did you stop yourself from just going berserk at the policeman or at the people who are following you?
Well, there's two easy answers to that. One, it's really not wise to attack policemen. and the other, I'm not generally a very like physically aggressive person. That just didn't come to my mind. It didn't really.
Hi, is this micro on? Yeah, right here. What I find interesting is the files. The police, they don't blog, but they have to keep files. How does one get to see these files, and do you happen to know what the police have to keep in their files? What do they have to do? Basically, for example, if your place was bugged, then they would have to write that down, wouldn't they?
Yes and no. The files are the normal files to the proceedings, and of course the defendants have a right to see their files to defend themselves in court, which is how we got to have the files. You are not normally entitled to, like, anyone is not entitled to have a look at these files. It's not public. And as far as what they have to put in there and what they actually do put in there, we know that there is many more files that we don't have. We only have, I think, something like 35 folders, but it's very obvious that it's not everything is in there. Also, it's clearly not only the police who are doing the investigation, but also secret services, and they are not obliged to give you what they have. So that is what we don't know. So there are some things in there, and others are not. I'm not an expert enough on legal things to be able to tell what has to be in there and what hasn't. But my impression is that they are actually not very legalistic in their interpretation of what they are actually putting in there.
Yes, what I've learned tonight is basically that we have to, what interests me is to look into what is actually to go in these files, because we as the people need a way to monitor the people who monitor us, and this is to be done, I think. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think this was not a question, so maybe the next comment.
I would like to ask if your relationship to your boyfriend has changed, because in a relationship you are very close and you are very open, and now when you think that everything what you say could be interpreted by some policeman, do you have the feeling you can't say your boyfriend everything you want to?
That's very difficult to answer, because relationships change anyway, so it's very difficult to answer in a way. I think it hasn't really changed much, because, like I said, I still fight with him on the phone if I have the feeling I have to, because I don't want to let that even be taken away from me. It has changed in a way that the situation that we've been through in the past half year is extremely straining for all of us, and I think no relationship will go unchanged with a situation of pressure like that. But given that pressure, I think we were doing extraordinarily well. And I think we are both trying very hard to stay as normal as possible, because it does move you closer when something like that happens, I think.
Thanks.
Did you ever try to fight back against what police was doing in the illegal time? So if they were looking at files, they would not be allowed to look at, or, you know, like, just go to court and say what you're doing is not allowed? Did you try doing that on several
times?
Yes,
of course. The lawyers are taking care of these kinds of things, yes. Like, I didn't grab the files because I still, again, don't think it's wise to start fighting with federal cops who are in your place, but the lawyers are doing that.
Okay, just for the record, who is tracking you right now? Would that person please stand up?
Well, it's easy. They can use internet stream, you see.
Thanks anyway.
Hi, I would like to ask if it has happened to you that some friends or people you know said something to the effect of, oh, when he is surveillance, there's surveillance and investigation by the police, then he has to have done something. Or that people distance themselves from you because they didn't trust you anymore.
Not that I know. I can't exclude the possibility that this happened, but then I think people may have done it without telling us so, which is a nicer way of doing that. But for the majority of people, rather the opposite was true. I don't know how many people I told that they need to now understand that they will also be subjected to surveillance if they contact us or if they go out with us or whatever else. And many, many people are saying, I really don't care. I don't want to leave you alone with this. I will still be there. Even people who explicitly phrased the things they said on the phone in a way that tried to attract as much police attention as possible, where I said, listen, this is serious. This is no game. Please don't do that because it really is dangerous. They really are serious about this. It's not playing. And where I had the feeling I had to protect them rather than they protecting themselves.
Thanks.
I expect you already made some thoughts about the people who did it all to you. So I wanted to know, what do you think about these people? Because every normal person would believe a guy who does anything like that would be insane.
You know, there's, I think, probably thousands of policemen out there. And it's their job, I guess.
Yes, but if how it all started, you know? In my opinion, it's even crazy that you make a war because there was something like the 11th of September.
Yes, I'm thinking, of course, this in different ways. One, like, what kind of people and how do they feel if they have to listen to my phone calls for a year now and have to read all of my email? That must be so boring, for one. And what kind of person would live a life of doing these kinds of things? And I have these kinds of thoughts, and then also I have these, like, more wider, on a wider perspective on things, I have these thoughts about why is this kind of thing happening? Why is this the kind of method that this country uses to catch terrorists is what they say, and then what actually is intended with this, which I would think is this to have more control over a wide spectrum of population, and specifically, of course, this is not directed at everybody. I think a mistake that was made also to my blog, or I think a mistake that is being made in the perception of this whole story is that this is directed at everybody. I think at the moment this is not directed at everybody. What is very obvious is it is directed at political activism. It's directed at a certain spectrum of political activism of the left at the moment. And I wouldn't exclude the possibility that this is being extended and extended and extended, and this is what has happened. And then I think my thoughts are the same than everybody else's who starts wondering about the policies of security and surveillance and control in our society that are going in a direction that I perceive as extremely dangerous, but not because I happen to be subjected to it in a very personal way, but because I think it is extremely dangerous for the society as a whole, and I think we probably, or I hope most of us agree on this.
Hello. I have like a question which is a bit more technical. So if you want to respond or someone else from the public. So I was thinking about what you said about your telephone and the interference with the television. And I'm asking myself whether, is it, of course your SIM is under control, no? Your telephone number is connected. But is it some? Is there anything also in the physical object telephone, or is it only in the SIM that the control goes through? Like that's, what was your impression? Do you have the impression that in the physical telephone object there's a controlling device or no? Just
I have no impression because I never looked and I'm not an expert enough to be able to detect these kind of things. I think there's many people here who are able to answer these questions better, but I would also like to know more about this type of thing.
Okay, thank you.
I'd just like to make a comment actually and say I really salute your courage. I used to work on the inside. I worked for MI5 in the UK for a number of years. And then blew the whistle with my partner, David Shaler, my ex-partner. And I also salute your courage in fighting for your man, because we went through something very, very similar. So thank you for standing up for our rights.
Thank you.
Everything you've been talking about tonight in terms of surveillance is all too true, and it can be worse. So just keep on fighting, that's all you can do. And please, everybody, please keep on fighting, because, again, what you're talking about is an erosion of all our basic freedoms. And it may just be the left at the moment, and it has been the left for decades, but it will creep out in this unending and illegal war on terror. So please, everyone, keep fighting back. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I had a question for you. Would you like to talk to the people who listen to your phone calls or read your emails and ask them what they really think about and not what they put in the folders? Would you like to do that?
No.
Excuse for my loose English.
No.
No?
Because I don't consider this to be our personal fight, them against us. I think they just happen to be there doing their job, and I don't really care about their personal feelings about this. I would like to understand about the mechanisms, yes, but as people, they are, I think, the people I care about least at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
In the discussion of this and similar topics over the last years, a topic often was that of apathy, that people often don't care about those people, those things happening because they maybe think it doesn't concern me or I have nothing to hide. In your talking to everyday, to average Joe people, do you think telling that story changes the apathy, has an effect on people?
A little, I think, yes. Because I had the feeling that I could reach many people who have never considered that this could be happening so close to them. Like what I said about the many comments being shocked and thinking this is normally happening in Russia or Korea or used to be happening in Russia or wherever, but not here. I think these people actually did start thinking about this in a different way than they did before. If it really changes something about this apathy, of this feeling of not being able to change the situation or not being able to do something against that, I'm not sure. I would hope that it does, but yeah, I don't really know. I mean, in a way, our situation coincided, for example, with a big demonstration against data retention in Berlin in September and a debate about the so-called terrorism of the left in the 70s in Germany, plus the debate about online searches, like very many issues that are somehow related. And I have the feeling there is something like a movement still growing that is really in an active way worried about privacy and surveillance. And I really hope that I can contribute to people getting active about these things, but of course I can't really say. But yes, I do think that I've reached out to some people who wouldn't have thought about it otherwise.
Hi, I have a comment and a question. First, the comment, thanks for blogging all this, because I think there might be a lot of people who believe in the system like it is right now, and maybe if they are in the focus of some of the police or something, they just think, okay, I'm just the exception. It generally works, but mistakes happen everywhere. But now if you blog about this, and maybe more people say, that happened to me as well, slowly people will see this is not just a mistake, this is actually part of the system, and we have to decide if we want this. And
I think.
And the question is, you said you had no time to translate your blog posts in English. So a pragmatic question is, do you maybe need people to translate your blogs, to your posts into English? Maybe like the past ones, or from now on.
I would appreciate that very much. I would feel a bit strange because I can't speak English and I could be writing in English, but yes, there's many people who don't understand German who said they are actually very sorry that they can't read my blog.
I guess so. This is more about time and nerves than speaking English.
It would be very nice if people would help with that, yes.
I mean, there's a room full of English-speaking people here, so...
We also have a lot of important things to do.
Okay,
This feeling of it always... We have to stop. I'll just finish this sentence. This feeling of always thinking this happens to other people but not me. I think you will never get rid of that. I had this myself. Even when the police were storming into my bedroom, I had this feeling, okay, so this is what it feels like. And at the same time, it felt totally so unbelievable that I had the feeling that I was completely like distancing myself out of that scene. I was from that moment on watching myself in some funny movie, but I had the feeling I'm not really there myself. It's not me. It's not happening to me. It can't be happening to me. And I think we all always think, can't be me. It must be somebody else. If you didn't by any chance have the possibility to donate, the boxes are still here. We have to finish here because the next talk is coming up. Thank you very much for being here.